Chapter 30. It was in the fourth year of my apprenticeship to Joe, and it was a Saturday night. There was a group assembled round the fire at the Three Jolly Bargemen, attentive to Mr. Wopsle as he read the newspaper aloud. Of that group I was one. A highly popular murder had been committed, and Mr. Wopsle was imbrued in blood to the eyebrows. He gloated over every abhorrent adjective in the description, and identified himself with every witness at the inquest. He faintly moaned, "I am done for," as the victim, and he barbarously bellowed, "I'll serve you out," as the murderer. He gave the medical testimony, in pointed imitation of our local practitioner, and he piped and shook, as the H turnpike keeper who had heard blows, to an extent so very paralytic, as to suggest a doubt regarding the mental competency of that witness. The coroner, in Mr. Wopsle's hands, became Timon of Athens, the beadle, Coriolanus. He enjoyed himself thoroughly, and we all enjoyed ourselves, and were delightfully comfortable. In this cozy state of mind we came to the verdict willful murder. Then, and not sooner, I became aware of a strange gentleman leaning over the back of the settle opposite me, looking on. There was an expression of contempt on his face, and he bit the side of a great forefinger as he watched the group of faces. "Well," said the stranger to Mr. Wopsle, when the reading was done, "you have settled it all to your own satisfaction, I have no doubt." Everybody started and looked up, as if it were the murderer. He looked at everybody coldly and sarcastically. "Guilty, of course?" said he. "Out with it. Come." "Sir," returned Mr. Wopsle, "without having the honor of your acquaintance, I do say guilty." Upon this, we all took courage to unite in a confirmatory murmur. "I know you do," said the stranger. "I knew you would. I told you so. But now I'll ask you a question. Do you know, or do you not know, that the law of England supposes every man to be innocent, until he is proved to be guilty?" "Sir," Mr. Wopsle began to reply, "as an Englishman myself, I—" "Come," said the stranger, biting his forefinger at him. "Don't evade the question. Either you know it, or you don't know it. Which is it to be?" He stood with his head on one side and himself on one side, in a bullying interrogative manner, and he threw his forefinger at Mr. Wopsle as it were to mark him out before biting it again. "Now," said he, "do you know it, or don't you know it?"
"Certainly I know it," replied Mr. Wopsle.
"Certainly you know it. Then why didn't you say so at first?
Now, I'll ask you another question," taking possession of Mr. Wopsle, as if he had a right to him. "Do you know that none of these witnesses have yet been cross-examined?"
Mr. Wopsle was beginning, "I can only say," when the stranger stopped him.
"What? You won't answer the question, yes or no? Now, I'll try you again," throwing his finger at him again.
"Attend to me. Are you aware, or are you not aware, that none of these witnesses have yet been cross-examined?
Come, I only want one word from you. Yes, or no?"
Mr. Wopsle hesitated, and we all began to conceive rather a poor opinion of him.
"Come," said the stranger, "I'll help you. You don't deserve help, but I'll help you. Look at that paper you hold in your hand.
What is it? What is it?" repeated Mr. Wopsle, eyeing it, much at a loss.
"Is it," pursued the stranger in his most sarcastic and suspicious manner, "the printed paper you have just been reading from?"
"Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. Now, turn to that paper, and tell me, whether it distinctly states that the prisoner expressly said that his legal advisers instructed him altogether to reserve his defense?"
"I read that just now," Mr. Wopsle pleaded.
"Never mind what you read just now, sir. I don't ask you what you read just now. You may read the Lord's Prayer backwards, if you like, and, perhaps, have done it before today. Turn to the paper."
"No, no, no, my friend. Not to the top of the column. You know better than that. To the bottom, to the bottom."
We all began to think Mr. Wopsle full of subterfuge.
Well, have you found it?
Here it is, said Mr. Wopsle. Now, follow that passage with your eye, and tell me whether it distinctly states that the prisoner expressly said that he was instructed by his legal advisers only to reserve his defense? Come, do you make that of it?
Mr. Wopsle answered, those are not the exact words.
Not the exact words, repeated the gentleman, bitterly.
Is that the exact substance?
Yes, said Mr. Wopsle.
Yes, repeated the stranger, looking round at the rest of the company with his right hand extended towards the witness, Wopsle.
And now I ask you, what do you say to the conscience of that man who, with that passage before his eyes, can lay his head upon his pillow after having pronounced a fellow creature guilty, unheard?
We all began to suspect that Mr. Wopsle was not the man we had thought him, and that he was beginning to be found out.
And that same man, remember, pursued the gentleman, throwing his finger at Mr. Wopsle heavily,
that same man might be summoned as a juryman upon this very trial, and, having thus deeply committed himself, might return to the bosom of his family, and lay his head upon his pillow, after deliberately swearing that he would well and truly try the issue joined between our sovereign lord the king, and the prisoner at the bar, and would a true verdict give according to the evidence, so help him God.
We were all deeply persuaded that the unfortunate Wopsle had gone too far, and had better stop in his reckless career while there was yet time.
The strange gentleman, with an air of authority not to be disputed, and with a manner expressive of knowing something secret about every one of us that would effectually do for each individual, if he chose to disclose it, left the back of the settle, and came into the space between the two settles, in front of the fire, where he remained standing, his left hand in his pocket, and he biting the forefinger of his right.
From information I have received, said he, looking round at us as we all quailed before him, I have reason to believe there is a blacksmith among you, by name Joseph or Joe Gargery.
Which is the man?
Here is the man, said Joe.
The strange gentleman beckoned him out of his place, and Joe went.
You have an apprentice, pursued the stranger, commonly known as Pip.
Is he here?
I am here,
I cried.
The stranger did not recognize me, but I recognized him as the gentleman I had met on the stairs, on the occasion of my second visit to Miss Havisham. I had known him the moment I saw him looking over the settle, and now that I stood confronting him with his hand upon my shoulder, I checked off again in detail his large head, his dark complexion, his deep-set eyes, his bushy black eyebrows, his large watch chain, his strong black dots of beard and whisker, and even the smell of scented soap on his great hand.
I wish to have a private conference with you too, said he, when he had surveyed me at his leisure.
It will take a little time. Perhaps we had better go to your place of residence.
I prefer not to anticipate my communication here. You will impart as much, or as little of it as you please to your friends afterwards.
I have nothing to do with that.
Amidst a wondering silence, we three walked out of the Jolly Bargemen, and in a wondering silence walked home.
While going along, the strange gentleman occasionally looked at me, and occasionally bit the side of his finger.
As we neared home, Joe, vaguely acknowledging the occasion as an impressive and ceremonious one, went on ahead to open the front door.
Our conference was held in the state parlor, which was feebly lighted by one candle.
It began with the strange gentleman sitting down at the table, drawing the candle to him, and looking over some entries in his pocketbook.
He then put up the pocketbook and set the candle a little aside.
After peering round it into the darkness at Joe and me, to ascertain which was which.
My name, he said, is Jaggers, and I am a lawyer in London. I am pretty well known.
I have unusual business to transact with you, and I commence by explaining that it is not of my originating.
If my advice had been asked, I should not have been here.
It was not asked, and you see me here.
What I have to do as the confidential agent of another, I do.
No less, no more. Finding that he could not see us very well from where he sat, he got up and threw one leg over the back of a chair and leaned upon it, thus having one foot on the seat of the chair and one foot on the ground. Now, Joseph Gargery, I am the bearer of an offer to relieve you of this young fellow, your apprentice. You would not object to cancel his indentures at his request and for his good? You would want nothing for so doing? Lord forbid that I should want anything for not standing in Pip's way, said Joe, staring. Lord forbidding is pious, but not to the purpose, returned Mr. Jaggers. The question is, would you want anything? Do you want anything? The answer is, returned Joe, sternly, no. I thought Mr. Jaggers glanced at Joe, as if he considered him a fool for his disinterestedness. But I was too much bewildered between breathless curiosity and surprise to be sure of it. Very well, said Mr. Jaggers. Recollect the admission you have made, and don't try to go from it presently. Who's a going to try? Retorted Joe. I don't say anybody is. Do you keep a dog? Yes, I do keep a dog. Bear in mind then, that Bragg is a good dog, but Oldfast is a better. Bear that in mind, will you? Repeated Mr. Jaggers, shutting his eyes and nodding his head at Joe, as if he were forgiving him something. Now, I return to this young fellow. And the communication I have got to make is, that he has great expectations. Joe and I gasped, and looked at one another. I am instructed to communicate to him, said Mr. Jaggers, throwing his finger at me sideways, that he will come into a handsome property. Further, that it is the desire of the present possessor of that property, that he be immediately removed from his present sphere of life, and from this place, and be brought up as a gentleman, in a word, as a young fellow of great expectations. My dream was out. My wild fancy was surpassed by sober reality. Miss Havisham was going to make my fortune on a grand scale. Now, Mr. Pip, pursued the lawyer, I address the rest of what I have to say to you. You are to understand, first, that it is the request of the person from whom I take my instructions, that you always bear the name of Pip. You will have no objection, I dare say, to your great expectations being encumbered with that easy condition. But if you have any objection, this is the time to mention it. My heart was beating so fast, and there was such a singing in my ears, that I could scarcely stammer I had no objection. I should think not. Now you are to understand, secondly, Mr. Pip, that the name of the person who is your liberal benefactor remains a profound secret, until the person chooses to reveal it. I am empowered to mention that it is the intention of the person to reveal it at first hand by word of mouth to yourself. When or where that intention may be carried out, I cannot say, no one can say. It may be years hence. Now, you are distinctly to understand that you are most positively prohibited from making any inquiry on this head, or any allusion or reference, however distant, to any individual whomsoever as the individual, in all the communications you may have with me. If you have a suspicion in your own breast, keep that suspicion in your own breast. It is not the least to the purpose what the reasons of this prohibition are. They may be the strongest and gravest reasons, or they may be mere whim. This is not for you to inquire into. The condition is laid down. Your acceptance of it, and your observance of it as binding, is the only remaining condition that I am charged with by the person from whom I take my instructions, and for whom I am not otherwise responsible. That person is the person from whom you derive your expectations, and the secret is solely held by that person and by me. Again, not a very difficult condition with which to encumber such a rise in fortune. But if you have any objection to it, this is the time to mention it. Speak out. Once more, I stammered with difficulty, that I had no objection. I should think not. Now, Mr. Pip, I have done with stipulations. Though he called me Mr. Pip, and began rather to make up to me, he still could not get rid of a certain air of bullying suspicion, and even now he occasionally shut his eyes and threw his finger at me while he spoke, as much as to express that he knew all kinds of things to my disparagement, if he only chose to mention them. We come next to mere details of arrangement. You must know that, although I have used the term expectations more than once, you are not endowed with expectations only. There is already lodged in my hands a sum of money amply sufficient for your suitable education and maintenance. You will please consider me your guardian. Oh, for I was going to thank him, I tell you at once, I am paid for my services, or I shouldn't render them. It is considered that you must be better educated, in accordance with your altered position, and that you will be alive to the importance and necessity of at once entering on that advantage. I said I had always longed for it. Never mind what you have always longed for, Mr. Pip, he retorted. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.